tuned in to Lightly on the Ground Radio on WRIR LP 97.3 and worldwide at WRIR.org. That's Richmond Independent Radio. We're exploring our food system, which includes everything from farm to table. It extends from a seed in a farmer's hand to a bill in the hands of those making policy on the local, national, and worldwide front. I am Zinni Gardner, and this is the second part of a conversation with Dr. Alan Straw, recorded in the live room at Richmond Independent Radio. Dr. Straw works with Virginia Cooperative Extension as an area specialist in horticulture, small fruit, and specialty crops. His home base is the Southwest District Office in Glade Spring, Virginia. He sees things from many points of view and has a wide and deep well of knowledge, so after such a long drive, it seemed a waste to stop talking after just a half hour. Our conversation was wide-ranging, given our common interest in sustainable agriculture in Virginia. We discussed organic and conventional weed control, especially cover cropping and the no-till practice, which are common to both systems. Cover crops are plants or a combination which are grown to a certain stage and then killed. The mass of plant material serves as mulch and protects the cash crop that is planted among the stubble. In both cases, the idea is to minimize the compacting effects of driving tractors and implements on the soil. In organic farming practice, the crop is rolled and broken and left to feed the soil. In conventional agriculture, the plant is killed or burnt down with herbicide. The long-term effects of chemical use in conventional and no-till farming was the main topic of our previous show, in light of a petition to label a new GMO product for use that is now in the USDA for consideration. Talking about farming led to talking about the work of farming, and that led to a discussion of the status of the agricultural labor force in Virginia and nationwide. Let's hear Dr. Straw talk about it.
Well, what we find in Virginia is that, you can get farm labor that from people who have, I guess you would call it permanent work visas or green cards, who have the ability to come in and work. Although most of those people anymore are not in agriculture. Those people, once they get that permanent work card or that green card, they typically want to go to greener pastures. I don't know if you've noticed lately, but if you look at a lot of your construction in downtown cities, a lot of road construction, There are a lot of migrant workers or Hispanic workers that are now working there because they pay a lot better than agriculture does. Mm-hmm. We've had several instances where growers had people who were legal workers that came here and worked for years and years and had the ability to work here with a green card are now in the construction industry. Mm-hmm. And so that's made it very hard for farmers to compete against that because the salaries are typically higher.
Yeah, I've just met two arborists who are from south of the border. I'm not exactly sure from where, but perhaps Mexico, perhaps Honduras. And they have their own tree companies with all kinds of equipment.
Right. And they've become very good at that.
Yeah.
And the main program now in Virginia, that has been the traditional way for years and years. And it's getting very hard for especially the Hispanic people to get those cards to afford that. It's illegal. With all the immigration things that are going on, it's very hard. In the U.S. now, in agriculture, there's actually what's called H-2A program, which is for agricultural workers.
How does that work?
And what you do is, most people use, you work with your Department of Labor, but they basically, you work usually with a third-party company, a Moss Labor or someone like that. I know in other states, like in North Carolina, the Fruit and Vegetable Growers Association actually has a company they work with, or actually they do it themselves, that recruit workers from Guatemala or Jamaica or Mexico or Central America someplace. And they will then recruit those workers to come into the U.S. And the process used to be relatively inexpensive. In times past, I know growers who the recruitment and the paperwork part were relatively minor. You would maybe pay a $1,000 fee for the first visa you tried to get, and then it would be maybe $25 to $100 a person for every additional one you got. Now, because of lawsuits and legal issues that are going on, there are now, my understanding is it's about $1,500 to $2,000 a person to get those workers into the U.S. And basically, you contract with that company to recruit your laborers out of wherever you want them from. And some of the recruitment companies do a really good job. They actually recruit people who are familiar with farm labor and that maybe grown tomatoes or grown peppers, and then recruit them to come to the U.S. So there's a recruitment fee for that service. And then, of course, if they can pass through the legal mumbo-jumbo of trying to get legal status to come to the U.S. For instance, if you've gotten caught coming into the U.S., and I think it's in the last 5 years, illegally, you cannot participate in the program. So there are a lot of restrictions in on who can come in. But they then come into the country, you know, they basically are recruited, their paperwork's put in order. Then you have to pay their transportation up here. And of course, if they're overnight, you'd have to pay for lodging or for meals incurred along the way. And most of the time, the bigger companies will put together buses and actually transport them from a central point in Mexico or wherever it is and bring them then into the U.S. And then the bus will drop them off at your farm. Then, of course, you have to pay them a rate, a wage. And most people feel like, well, they're not being paid fairly. They have to be paid more because of fair wage and hour issues. And basically, and don't quote me on this, but it's like $9.24 an hour is the minimum wage that they can receive this year in Virginia. Huh. And so it's not an unfair wage. They're actually, it's what, almost $2 above minimum wage.
Right.
And so it's a very fair wage. Then though, if you're in participating in the HTA program, you have to provide housing for that person free of charge for the entire time they're here.
Mm-hmm.
And your housing has to be inspected by the health department and or Department of Labor that it meets the standards of the HTA program, or of migrant labor housing, I think is what it really is. It's not just H2A,
mm-hmm.
but you have to have it inspected. And then you also have to provide that person transportation back and forth to town once a week to go to the grocery store or to the, most people now have laundry facilities on the farm,
mm-hmm.
but if they don't, to take them to the laundromat, to take them to wire money back to Mexico, whatever they want to do, you have to take them to town at least once a week. And usually if you employ very many, that means at least a multi-passenger van. And I know a lot of larger growers who actually use school buses. There are laws about how much you have to insure each seat on that van or bus, like so many $1,000 worth of liability insurance on each seat. So if there were an accident or something, those people would be covered by the insurance. And then obviously you have to provide a driver that can drive that bus or van to town and take the time to go. So mm-hmm. it gets to be quite expensive. Then once they fulfill their labor contract and the work is done, if they fulfill 2/3 of their contract, then you have to pay their way back home. And so we had talked a little earlier in just visiting, a lot of my growers that I work with feel like their expense for this labor is about $15 to $16 an hour by the time they pay all the recruitment, the mm-hmm. administrative fees, transportation to town, housing, and then the transportation back home, not to mention the hourly wage.
There is some resentment around this system, and I know that in some states it's more the case than in others. And we also have an unemployment rate in each state. What do you see as the connection there? Why don't we have American workers in agriculture?
Well, that's a very complex question. The first problem is that most people don't realize is if you do participate in the H-2A program, you have to employ as many U.S. citizens legally as you do Hispanics.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
But you have to hire as many. The problem that we have is, though, and because when you advertise a wage rate of $9.24 an hour, a lot of times you get calls. Yeah, I'll be out there.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the people, though, locally that come out and apply for that work usually don't make it to lunchtime or till the paperwork's filled out because it's very back-breaking, hard work. I've only known of one that has stayed for longer than a week in Southwest Virginia, and his choice was the judge told him he could either go to jail or go work for this man.
Mm-hmm.
And he did. He made it for quite a while because he didn't want to go back to jail. But, you know, it is very, very difficult work. And I'm not saying Americans are lazy, but I just know that for a lot of Americans, it's easier to draw an unemployment check or a welfare check or some sort of government help than it is to go out and pick tomatoes or strawberries all day long.
A long time ago, I left my home for a job in the fruit trees. I miss those.
About the nuts and bolts of how the H-2A program works. What is it like from the farmer's side? What is their actual experience with it?
Well, obviously, some large farmers and even some of our medium-sized farmers are very satisfied with the system. But it's, as I've already alluded to, it can be in a very expensive system for a lot of growers, and especially for smaller and middle-sized growers.
And I would think there's a lot of documentation that goes
there. There's a lot of documentation. You have to start at least, I think it's at least 60 days prior to the time you need the labor. So, you know, for a lot of people, that means for labor that you're going to use, say, this spring in 2012, you actually have to start the process of paperwork in November or December of 2011. So they've already started this process, and then a lot of the paperwork has to be finalized, like, say, 45 to 60 days prior to that worker coming into the country. The other thing is that, you know, for a smaller grower that doesn't need very many people, obviously that these costs go up. You know, I mean, we've talked about a dollar figure of $15 or $16 an hour, and that might be for somebody that's using maybe, you know, 8 or 10 workers. You know, I've had some people that bring in, you know, over 100, and I think because of the economy of scales, that dollar figure drops because per hour, maybe it'll $12 an hour or something, making it a little more feasible. But for a small grower that, say, needs two, three, four, five people, it can be very, very daunting and very expensive. So, you know, one of the things that we've run into is a lot of our growers have used, you know, just local workers. And sometimes they're Hispanic. Sometimes, you know, they can have documentation, and so they can fill out an I-9 form. But we don't know, and that grower doesn't know whether that documentation is legal or fraudulent. And so that kind of has left the growers now in a situation where if I don't use the H-2A program, and now in some areas, especially if I were in another state, not in Virginia, but, you know, Georgia, North Carolina, Tennessee, Alabama, where they've passed E-Verify laws now, there's, you know, there's risk of obviously stiff fines if that grower gets caught working somebody who's not legal. So it's kind of forcing people to the H-2A program. And to be honest, in some situations, a lot of our middle-aged to older farmers are not very educated. And I know that's not a stereotype, because I know we have a lot of well-educated farmers. But in some sectors, in some parts around the Commonwealth and in adjacent states, we have some farmers that, you know, have never got to finish high school because they started farming.
Right. They've just been farming all their lives and generations before them.
Right. And then so at 15 or 16 years of age, they just became a full-time farmer. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they don't have, a lot of education. They don't know how to deal with this paperwork. Plus the time constraint of, you know, they're trying to farm and they're trying to do all the paperwork that has to be done with the farm. And then, you know, there's other things now that are piled on top of them, regulations that they don't necessarily understand. And I know a lot of the growers that I deal with, every time they hear E-Verify, the hair stands up on the back of their neck, because they're going, you know, something else that we have to comply with, and something else that makes it harder for us to produce food and to grow a crop and to make a living.
So are there people who come up here without an H-2A who are still undocumented, and are there people who can't get back home?
Yes, and there are. There are people, and there used to be a lot of people, transient workers, who would work in the wintertime in Florida, and then as the crops would ripen and mature, they would move up through Georgia and harvest maybe Vidalia onions, and then they would come on up into the Carolinas, Tennessee, Virginia, in the summer months and work, and then as it would get cold, I mean, and some went even farther north, maybe to pick peaches in Michigan, and then as the weather would get cold, they would work back and work their way back south, and then be back in Florida in the wintertime and work in the citrus industry or the tomato industry in South Florida through the winter months. But a lot of those people can't go back home, so if they ever do go, then they can't come back to work in the U.S. And a lot of those people that have stayed for a number of years actually now have their families with them. Mm-hmm. So, you know, their children are citizens. They were born here, but they're not, and they can't, you know, they don't want to leave their families here. So it's made really for a hard situation for a lot of these workers.
So they were literally seasonal workers.
They were seasonal workers.
And the whole family moves around as...
Right. And so it's made a very interesting situation that needs to be dealt with. And I'm not sure, you know, it's not a very popular decision, because in extreme right-wing opinion, most people feel like farmers are just looking for cheap labor. And that's not the case. Most farmers I know pay minimum, well over minimum wage, you know, at least $8 to $9 an hour. A lot of times, if they're a good worker, $10 an hour. We have piece rate workers that I know in Southwest Virginia and right along the North Carolina line that make well over $100 a day, because they get paid piece rate, and they get paid on production, not on an hourly rate. Again, I've known some that make over $1,000 a week, you know, doing farm labor.
Just by working hard.
Just by working hard, and they make good wages. And, you know, you hate to lose those workers because they are good. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we ran into with some labor issues in the last couple of years, and I'm not saying that H-2A is all this way, but we actually have some situations where some H-2A laborers know that they're guaranteed $9 and whatever, $9.24 an hour. It doesn't matter whether they pick one bucket of tomatoes in an hour or 10 buckets of tomatoes in an hour. While others, so we'd have some that were picking and say they were making $10 or $12 an hour, but right next to them was somebody who wasn't even making right wage, But that person didn't matter because he knew he was going to get $9.24 an hour. So the one that was making, you know, over wage would say, why am I going to work that hard and bust my butt for another $1 or $2 an hour when this person's getting $9.24 and all they're doing is just picking it as slow as they want to and taking their time. And so it's really causing an issue within the H-2A program is the deficiency of our laborers.
A long time ago, I left my home just a boy passing 20. Could you spare a coin and a Christian prayer? My luck has turned against me.
We could do about it because I had an interesting situation at a farmer's market. There's a family that comes and they are Mexicans. And when they first showed up at the farmer's market, people were saying, well, are they producers? My answer to that question was, these people have been growing our food for generations and now this family owns land and has an extended family of people who are farming that land and bringing the beautiful produce to our farmers' markets. Mm-hmm. That's a success story.
We were just talking about this yesterday, some friends and I were, that there's now, because of the E-Verify and the immigration that we're dealing with, we now have growers who are selling their farms in the United States and buying land in Mexico so that they can grow the product in Mexico because they can get the labor and then ship it back into the U.S.
There's one solution.
That's one solution, but it comes back to the issue of, is our imported food held to the same strict controls that what we grow in the U.S.? And I know that the Food Safety Modernization Act that was passed is now addressing that. And I know a lot of our food is inspected that comes in. But do you think about how much food that's imported into this country every day and from all the different countries in the world that it comes from? It's very, very difficult for the USDA or the Food and Drug Administration to inspect all that food and to make sure that it adheres to the same requirements that our EPA and our FDA and our USDA put on the production of food. Mm-hmm. So it's not, to me, it's not the answer. Because we're taking jobs out of the United States. Mm-hmm. We're now importing more of our food. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I've dealt with through the years, the last several years, with Homeland Security is, what is one of the most essential things that we need to protect in this country?
Water. And food.
And food.
Right.
And so wouldn't it make sense to promote the production of local food in the United States, and not just local from the stand, but producing our food in our own country and trying to minimize the amount of imports, because to me, food security is a very, very important thing, and it's very important in homeland security.
Right. Well, that brings us right back to the purpose of this show, which is about promoting our local growers and our local economy. And I really appreciate your take on that and kind of putting it into a national and international perspective. Thank you, Dr. Alan Straw, for the long trek across the state to be with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you.
Good. Nice to meet you, too. To participate in the discussion, please email your thoughts to sunny@wrir.org. Lightly on the Ground Radio is a Sunny Gardner production for Richmond Independent Radio, broadcast on WRIR LP 97.3 FM and WRIR.org. I am grateful to all the volunteers at Richmond Independent Radio, especially engineer Ethan Scott, and to our community of donors and underwriters who bought us all this equipment for making radio. Befriend us on Facebook by joining the Lightly on the Ground radio group so you will know who will appear on the show and when podcasts become available. The theme music is Bonefire Dance by Rattlemouth, and the incidental music today was One More Dollar by Gillian Welch. I hope you'll join us again on the radio. Until then, walk in the light and live lightly on the ground.